Chapter 30 Miller. They sat on the floor with their backs to a bank of pachinko machines no one was playing, watching the ebb and flow of the violence around them like it was a soccer game. Miller's hat was perched on his bent knee. He felt the vibration against his back when one of the displays cycled through its dupe call. The lights glittered and glowed. Holden beside him was breathing hard, like he'd run a race. Out beyond them, like something from Hieronymus Bosch, the casino levels of Eros prepared for death. The riot's momentum had spent itself for now. Men and women gathered together in small groups. Guards strode through, threatening and scattering any bunch that got too large or unruly. Something was burning fast enough that the air scrubbers couldn't get out the smell of melting plastic. The Bhangra Muzak mixed with weeping and screaming and wails of despair. Some idiot was shouting at one of the so-called cops. He was a lawyer. He was getting all of this on video. Whoever was responsible was going to be in big trouble. Miller watched a bunch of people start to gather around the confrontation. The guy in the riot gear listened, nodded, and shot the lawyer once in the kneecap. The crowd dispersed except for one woman, the lawyer's wife or girlfriend, bent down over him screaming. And in the privacy of Miller's skull, everything slowly fell apart. He was aware of having two different minds. One was the Miller he was used to, familiar with. The one who was thinking about what was going to happen when he got out, what the next step would be in connecting the dots between Phoebe Station, Ceres, Eros, and Juliet Mao, how to work the case. That version of him was scanning the crowd the way he might have watched the line at a crime scene, waiting for some detail, some change to catch his attention, send him in the right direction to solve the mystery. It was the short-sighted, idiotic part of him that couldn't conceive of his own personal extinction, and it thought surely, surely there was going to be an after. The other Miller was different. Quieter. Sad, maybe, but at peace. He'd read a poem many years before called The Death Self, and he hadn't understood the term until now. A knot at the middle of his psyche was untying. All the energy he'd put into holding things together, Ceres, his marriage, his career, himself, was coming free. He'd shot and killed more men in the past day than in his whole career as a cop. He'd started, only started, to realize that he'd actually fallen in love with the object of his search after he knew for certain that he'd lost her. He'd seen unequivocally that the chaos he'd dedicated his life to holding at bay was stronger and wider and more powerful than he would ever be. No compromise he could make would be enough. His death self was unfolding in him, and the dark blooming took no effort. It was a relief, a relaxation, a long, slow exhale after decades of holding it in. He was in ruins, but it was okay, because he was dying. "Hey," Holden said. His voice was stronger than Miller had expected it might be. "Yeah? Did you ever watch Misko and Marisko when you were a kid?" Miller frowned. "The kid show?" he asked. "The one with the five dinosaurs and the evil guy in the big pink hat," Holden said, then started humming a bright, boppy tune. Miller closed his eyes and then started singing along. The music had had words once. Now it was only a series of rises and falls, runs up and down a major scale with every dissonance resolved in the note that followed. "Guess I must have," Miller said when they reached the end. "I loved that show. I must have been 8 or 9 last time I saw it," Holden said. "Funny how that stuff stays with you." "Yeah," Miller said. He coughed, turned his head, and spat out something red. "How are you holding together?" "I think I'm okay," Holden said. Then, a moment later, he added, "As long as I don't stand up." "Nauseated?" "Yeah, some." "Me too. What is this? Holden asked. I mean, what the hell is this all about? Why are they doing this? It was a fair question. Slaughtering Eros, slaughtering any station in the belt, was a pretty easy job. Anyone with first-year orbital mechanics skills could find a way to sling a rock big enough and fast enough to crack the station open. With the effort Protogen had put in, they could have killed the air supply, or drugged it, or whatever the hell they wanted to do. This wasn't a murder. This wasn't even a genocide. And then, there was all the observation equipment. Cameras, communications arrays, air and water sensors. There were only two reasons for that kind of shit. Either the mad bastards at Protogen got off on watching people die, or... They don't know, Miller said. What? He turned to look at Holden. The first Miller, the detective, the optimist, the one who needed to know, was driving now. His death self didn't fight. Because, of course, it didn't. It didn't fight anything. Miller raised his hand like he was giving a lecture to a rookie. They don't know what it's about. Or, you know, at least they don't know what's going to happen. This isn't even built like a torture chamber. It's all being watched, right? Water and air sensors. It's a petri dish. They don't know what that shit that killed Julie does. And this is how they're finding out. Holden frowned. Don't they have laboratories? Places where you could maybe put that crap on some animals or something? Because as experimental design goes, this seems a little messed up. Maybe they need a really big sample size, Miller said. Or maybe it's not about the people. Maybe it's about what happens to the station. There's a cheery thought, Holden said. The Julie Mao in Miller's mind brushed a lock of hair out of her eyes. She was frowning, looking thoughtful, interested, concerned. It all had to make sense. It was like one of those basic orbital mechanics problems where every hitch and veer seemed random until all the variables slipped into place. What had been inexplicable became inevitable. Julie smiled at him. Julie, as she had been. As he imagined she had been. The Miller who hadn't resigned himself to death smiled back. And then she was gone, his mind shifting to the noise from the pachinko machines and the low, demonic wailing of the crowds. Another group, 20 men hunkered low like linebackers, made a rush toward the mercenaries guarding the opening to the port. The gunmen mowed them down. If we had enough people, Holden said after the sound of machine guns fell away, we could make it. They couldn't kill all of us. That's what the patrol goons are for, Miller said. Make sure no one can organize a big enough push. Keep stirring the pot. But if it was a mob, I mean a really big mob, it could... Maybe, Miller agreed. Something in his chest clicked in a way it hadn't a minute before. He took a slow, deep breath, and the click happened again. He could feel it deep in his left lung. At least Naomi got away, Holden said. That is good. She's amazing. She'd never put Amos and Alex in danger if she could help it. I mean, she's serious. Professional. Strong, you know? I mean, she's really, really... Pretty, too, Miller said. Great hair. Love the eyes. No, that wasn't what I meant, Holden said. You don't think she's a good-looking woman? She's my XO, Holden said. She's... You know, off limits. Holden sighed. She got away, didn't she? Holden asked. Almost for sure. They were silent. One of the linebackers coughed, stood up, and limped back into the casino, trailing blood from a hole in his ribs. The Bhangra gave way to an Afropop medley with a low, sultry voice singing in languages Miller didn't know. She'd wait for us. Holden said. Don't you think she'd wait for us? Almost for sure, Miller's death self said, not particularly caring if it was a lie. He thought about it for a long moment, then turned to face Holden again. "Hey, just so you know it, I'm not exactly at my best right now." "Okay. All right." The glowing orange lockdown lights on the tube station across the level clicked to green. Miller sat forward, interested. His back felt sticky, but it was probably just sweat. Other people had noticed the change, too. Like a current in a water tank, the attention of the nearby crowd shifted from the mercenaries blocking the way to the port to the brushed steel doors of the tube station. The doors opened, and the first zombies appeared. Men and women, their eyes glassy and their muscles slack, stumbled out through the open doors. Miller had seen a documentary feed about hemorrhagic fevers as part of his training on Ceres Station. Their movements were the same. Listless, driven, autonomic, like rabid dogs whose minds had already been given over to their disease. "Hey," Miller said, his hand on Holden's shoulder. "Hey, it's happening." An older man in a pair of emergency services scrubs approached the shambling newcomers. His hands were out before him, as if he could corral them by simple force of will. The first zombie in the pack turned empty eyes toward him and vomited up a spray of very familiar brown goo. "Look," Holden said. "I saw." "No, look." All down the casino level, tube station lights were going off lockdown. Doors were opening. The people were pulsing toward the open tubes and the implicit, empty promise of escape, and away from the dead men and women walking out from them. "Vomit zombies," Miller said. "From the rad shelters," Holden said. "The thing, the organism. It goes faster in radiation, right? That's why what's-her-name was so freaky about the lights and the vac suit." "Her name's Julie. And yeah, those incubators were for this. Right here," Miller said and sighed. He thought about standing up. "Well, we may not die of radiation poisoning after all." "Why not just pump that shit into the air?" Holden asked. "Anaerobic, remember?" Miller said. "Too much oxygen kills him." The vomit-covered emergency medicine guy was still trying to treat the shambling zombies like they were patients, like they were still humans. There were smears of the brown goo on people's clothes, on the walls. The tube doors opened again, and Miller saw half a dozen people dodge into a tube car coated in brown. The mob churned, unsure what to do. The group mind stretched past its breaking point. A riot cop jumped forward and started spraying down the zombies with gunfire. The entrance and exit wounds spilled out fine loops of black filament, and the zombies went down. Miller chuckled even before he knew what was funny. Holden looked at him. "They didn't know," Miller said. "The bully boys in riot gear? They aren't gonna get pulled out. Meat for the machine, just like the rest of us." Holden made a small, approving sound. Miller nodded, but something was niggling at the back of his mind. The thugs from Ceres and their stolen armor were being sacrificed. That didn't mean everyone was. He leaned forward. The archway leading to the port was still manned. Mercenary fighters in formation, guns at the ready. If anything, they looked more disciplined now than they had before. Miller watched as the guy in the back with extra insignia on his armor barked into a mic. Miller had thought hope was dead. He'd thought all his chances had been played, and then, like a bitch, it all hauled itself up out of the grave. "Get up," Miller said. "What? Get up, they're going to pull back." "Who?" Miller nodded at the mercenaries. "They knew," he said. "Look at them. They aren't freaking out. They aren't confused. They were waiting for this." "And you think that means they'll fall back?" "They aren't going to be hanging out. Stand up." Almost as if he'd been giving the order to himself, Miller groaned and creaked to his feet. His knees and spine ached badly. The click in his lung was getting worse. His belly made a soft, complicated noise that would have been concerning under different circumstances. As soon as he started moving, he could feel how far the damage had gone. His skin not yet in pain, but in the soft presentiment of it, like the gap between a serious burn and the blisters that followed. If he lived, it was going to hurt. If he lived, everything was going to hurt. His death self tugged at him. The sense of release, of relief, of rest felt like something precious being lost. Even while the chattering, busy, machine-like mind kept grinding, grinding, grinding forward, the soft, bruised center of Miller's soul urged him to pause, sit back down, let the problems go away. "What are we looking for?" Holden said. He'd stood up. A blood vessel in the man's left eye had given way, the white of the sclera turning a bright, meaty red. "What are we looking for?" the death self echoed. "They're going to fall back," Miller said, answering the first question. "We follow. Just outside the range, so whoever's going last doesn't feel like he has to shoot us." "Isn't everyone going to do the same thing? I mean, once they're gone, isn't everyone in this place going to head in for the port?"
"I expect so," Miller said. "So let's try to slip in ahead of the rush. Look, there."
It wasn't much. Just a change in the mercenaries' stance, a shift in their collective center of gravity. Miller coughed. It hurt more than it should have. "What are we looking for?" his death self asked again, its voice more insistent. "An answer? Justice? Another chance for the universe to kick us in the balls? What is through that archway that there isn't a faster, cleaner, less painful version of in the barrel of our gun?" The mercenary captain took a casual step back and strode down the exterior corridor and out of sight. Where he had been, Julie Mao sat, watching him go. She looked at Miller. She waved him on.
"Not yet," he said.
"When?" Holden said, his voice surprising Miller. Julie in his head flickered out, and he was back in the real world.
"It's coming," Miller said.
He should warn the guy. It was only fair. You got into a bad place, and at the very least you owed your partner the courtesy of letting him know. Miller cleared his throat. That hurt too. "It's possible I may start hallucinating or become suicidal. You might have to shoot me," he thought. Holden glanced over at him. The pachinko machines lit them blue and green and shrieked in artificial delight.
"What?" Holden said.
"Nothing. Getting my balance," Miller said.
Behind them, a woman shouted. Miller glanced back to see her pushing a vomit zombie away, a slick of brown goo already covering the live woman. At the archway, the mercenaries quietly stepped back and started down the corridor.
"Come on," Miller said.
He and Holden walked toward the archway, Miller pulling his hat on. Loud voices, screams, the low, liquid sound of people being violently ill. The air scrubbers were failing, the air taking on a deep, pungent odor like beef broth and acid. Miller felt like there was a stone in his shoe. But he was almost certain, if he looked, there would be only a point of redness where his skin was starting to break down. No one shot at them. No one told them to stop. At the archway, Miller led Holden against the wall, then ducked his head around the corner. A quarter second was all it took to know the long, wide corridor was empty. The mercs were done here, and leaving Eros to its fate. The window was open. The way was clear.
Last chance, he thought.
And he meant both the last chance to live and the last one to die. "Miller?"
"Yeah," he said.
It looks good. Come on, before everyone gets the idea.